Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waving for a video, for the video portion of our show, we have Rich Esteropoli. And if you've heard me pronounce the name differently on previous shows, I was just doing that as a test. And I'm nailing the name now. And Rich is retired Secret Service. Thank you so much for being on the show, Rich. We appreciate it. And also new to the show, Marlon Marachi, retired LAPD. He also has the IA Guy podcast going as well. Thanks so much for being on the show. A shout out to our sponsors. You know, we have our title sponsor, Gulls at Gulls.com. Our satellite sponsor, thanks to ComplianceTechnologies.com. This is our fifth week on satellite radio. We've got BlueTheGold.com, MyMedicare.live, GunLearn.com, Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. Thanks to them, we're streaming to about 1.5 million people right now. And also Tubells, they built a new online store at leoroundtable.com. You get really cool gear like the shirt that I'm wearing. And hey, we don't pad the cost. I pay what you guys pay. We're just trying to get our gear out there. So check that out, please. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at tampafp.com. Thanks for carrying our content. Also Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com, and also lawofficer.com. Thanks to all these entities for helping make this show happen. Now, what in the world are we going to be talking about today? Well, we have enough update, and it's about that terrorism thing going on. Terrorism charges filed after flamethrower attack injures 8 at a pro-Israel event in Colorado. So we got some update info on that. We got a judge dropping a case against a Michigan detective who hit and killed Samuel Sterling. I remember that case when we covered it, and the detective was on a federal task force, which kind of got him in the grease. And the guy was running away and unarmed. But listen, you'll be surprised about how what went down with that. We got a body cam video released in a police shooting that left 2 Mifflin Township police officers wounded. And the it's like 3 videos in one. The last video, a surveillance video showing the bad guy, the stance he took, and pretty much, you know, trying to take out these cops. And they went to the hospital. He got away. They're still looking for him, but it's a scary story. Supreme Court tosses the ruling against Minneapolis officer in the George Floyd riot case. You don't see a lot of that going on. Casper police release video footage of a fatal shooting of a homeowner during response to a burglary call. Yeah, the cops shoot the female homeowner, but hey, it's not all what it seems. There's some extenuating circumstances on that one. Then we got a double stabbing and arson suspect fatally shot by Prince George deputy. So we've got a lot of stuff going on. So if it's okay with you guys, we'll start off with our main topic. It's kind of a continuation from yesterday. It's at tampafp.com and rvmnews.com, which stands for Red Voice Media. Terrorism charges filed after flamethrower attack injures 8 at the pro-Israel event that happened in Colorado. So we had 8 individuals were injured. And of course, this is more information than what we had available yesterday. One person was critically injured after a man wielding a makeshift flamethrower. He made his own, and he shouted "Free Palestine" while he's doing this attack. And it was at a pro-Israel demonstration in Boulder's popular Pearl Street pedestrian mall that happened on Sunday. The FBI is investigating the incident. They say it's a targeted act of terrorism. The suspect has been identified. I'm not going to read his name out, but he's a 45-year-old loser who was apprehended and being held on a $10 million bond at the Boulder County Jail. And he's facing a range of felony charges, including use of incendiary devices. And it goes on to say that he's Egyptian national. He had overstayed his visa. He entered the U.S. during the Biden administration, and the attack occurred just before 1:30 p.m., so it's really around the middle of the afternoon on Sunday, as participants of the Run for Their Lives walk, and they ended up running for their lives, unfortunately. It was aimed at raising awareness for Israeli hostages that were being held in Gaza. And according to witnesses and law enforcement people that were there, our bad guy hurled an incendiary device. He throws it into the crowd, and it causes burns to 8 people, ranging in age from 52 to 88, if you can believe that. One of the victims is remaining in critical condition. The other sustained more minor injuries. We have special agent in charge, Mark Mihalik, confirmed that our bad guy was heard yelling "Free Palestine" while this assault's taking place. FBI Director Cash Patel and Deputy Director Dan Bongino stated that the early evidence and the information and witness accounts suggest the attack was ideologically motivated violence. So that's what we know so far. And then a little follow-up thing saying that this attack is following a pattern of heightened violence, including recent high-profile incidents against the Jewish community. And last month, we have 2 Israeli embassy staffers who were fatally shot in Washington, D.C., and that was also labeled as an act of terrorism. So Rich Esteropoli, I'm sorry, I was testing you, but go ahead, buddy. Why don't you start us off on this one?
I'm paying attention, Chip. I got you. regardless of what you call me, I'll still answer. Hey, for those of you that can't see the background that I've got up, it's the New York City skyline with the Freedom Tower prominently displayed in the center of my screen. The reason that's there is because this is a good opportunity to remind everyone that building has been the subject of getting blown up twice, once successfully, of course, the events of September 11th. I don't want anyone to observe what went on in Colorado and think that this is purely an anti-Jewish or anti-Israeli event. These events do not take place in a vacuum. You could have been the guy walking your dog. You could have been the person pushing the carriage. You could have been the guy just out for a summer stroll. Yet when this guy is walking down the street yelling Free Palestine, regardless of what he's yelling, it's kind of irrelevant. The guy's got two spray bottles filled with gasoline and he's setting people on fire. Who cares what his motivation is? Who cares whether you're Jewish or not? This is everyone's problem. And because of the stance of the former administration and the way things are now with these sanctuary cities, these anti-police motivations, these elected congressional leaders who are pro-Hamas, and there are no repercussions for anyone like there used to be, these events are going to get bigger and bigger, and they're going to occur more and more often. And that building that those of you that can see me, that is so prominently displayed on my screen, is going to once again become a target. And if there are 5,000 people in the building, and 4,999 of them happen to be non-Jewish, totally irrelevant what your religion is or what your background is. You are in just as much danger as anyone else. And that also refers to the cops who are going to be responding to more and more incidents like this throughout the course of the summer. And pay attention to the date far away.
Wow. And that stuff, you're spot on, Rich. It's just, I just don't like hearing it, but you're right. There's going to be more incidents like this. And I mean, it's just, you know, if you're not paying attention, you know, it's really going to happen. You're absolutely correct. And there's really not a lot we can do about it.
You know, one of the things I think I bring to the table here, Chip, especially with this story, is I ran the JTTF, the Joint Terrorist Task Force in New York, for 8 years in the aftermath of September 11th. I am well plugged into what's going on here. You can bet that this isn't just an isolated incident. There are people sitting in their caves, eating dirt and rocks with their tablecloths on their head all over the world that are watching these events unfold, right? And while, yeah, it's difficult to find somebody to strap a bomb to their body and blow themselves up, there are people out there willing to do that. But something like this is so simple to do. You are going to see more and more events with improvised explosive devices that are just as deadly as somebody that can craft, you know, the highest level fissionable device imaginable. You will see more and more of these things going on.
So, Rich, do me a favor. There's people that are listening to the show or watching the show, and I'm just trying to create a word picture for them, so that a verbal word picture, if you will, to put their mind in the place where, I mean, look, as law enforcement, we have a tendency to think like bad guys, right? I mean, that's one benefit to the job, if you want to call it a benefit, but are there people around the world that are cheering when stuff like this goes on, when they see it and they are encouraged by this kind of action?
Unfortunately, not only are there people around the world who we know are our enemies, right? The Iranians, the Iraqis, the Afghanis, all these people in Egypt and living in the caves all over the world in the mountainside, they're certainly cheering us on. But unfortunately, in today's environment, we've got people cheering these events on that are members of Congress. If you don't think people like Rashida Tlaib, who's flying a Hamas flag outside of her office in the Capitol, Ilhan Omar and her cronies from, you know, Somalia and the Sudan are cheering this on, you are totally wrong. Look at the comments from AOC, a New York City congressperson. She came out today and denounced the anti-Israeli effort. Hey, lady, where have you been for the last 6 years? All of a sudden, you're denouncing all of this stuff? It's pure nonsense. It's theater. There is no shortage of people that love what's going on here, hate America, hate cops, and hate what we stand for.
Yeah, so people listen to the show. Even if you don't go on in public to these gatherings or these events where you've got, you know, maybe hundreds of thousands of people there and stuff, you need to wrap your head around the fact that there are people out there and this is what they live for. This is what they're looking for. And this is what they get excited about. This is what their life mission is. And they want to create, chaos, mayhem, injuries, kill people, because we're the bad guys and we're the infidels and there's no hope for us. They don't want to convert us. They want to kill us. So You know, once we wrap our head around that and we know where we stand and what the threat is, at least we're educated on that front. So it helps us do a little bit more about it. I mean, just like when they created the Law Enforcement Officer Safety Act, you know, LEOSA, and a lot of that was done to so that LEOs retired and active LEOs are also covered by LEOSA. And when I say LEOs, of course, law enforcement officers, but it was so that we would be in a place and have the capability to take action, appropriate action to neutralize threats like this, you know, when they happen. And that allows us to carry countrywide in U.S. territories. And just, you know, it's still not enough because I still see things like this going on. And in different parts of the country, you know, this guy would have been put down right away. But it didn't happen. And of course, we're talking about Colorado, too.
Well, that's exactly right. You're talking about a city that's a known sanctuary city. And more, maybe more importantly, you're talking about a city whose police chief took it upon himself. He wouldn't even come out and denounce this as a hate crime or say it had any ties to anything anti-Israeli. Are you kidding me? How many thousands of people had their iPhones out and videotaped this thing? It's clearly an anti-Israeli initiative. Clearly an act of terrorism, but he wouldn't say that. Maybe it's because this guy's more concerned about going to his LGBTQ, any other letter rallies like he did last year with his boyfriend, spray painting his badge all the colors of the rainbow, instead of getting out there and doing his job, right? That's the problem. But this is a good opportunity to remind all the cops that are out there, because I know there's a lot of rookie cops who may be listening to this, maybe even watching this. Pay attention to what you're rolling into. These people love their improvised explosive devices. You've got to be careful what you're responding to.
Thank you, Rich. Commercial break, guys. We'll be right back. All right, guys. You know, as police officers, you know, we can buy, well, we buy a lot of gear, right? And we can get our gear from a lot of different places, especially when we're looking online. But I want to remind you guys about the importance of supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that fits that bill better than Gauls@Gauls.com. Even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which of course they do in spectacular fashion. Now they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focus organizations like this radio show. And I encourage you that when you're looking for gear, support our title sponsor and go to Gauls.com, and they're going to do you a solid here. Listen to this. For the loyal listeners of the show, they're going to give you a radio code. It's radio15, and you get 15% off of your next purchase until June the 31st at Gauls.com. So again, it's radio15. And 15% off that gets you at Gauls.com. They also have gift cards, and we give away two every week on the show. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Gauls gift card, and they'll be your new best friends. Go to Gauls.com in order to make that stuff happen. I'm doing it today, Gauls.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block. We're joined today by Rich Steropoli, and he's retired Secret Service. And, of course, Marlon Meraci, he's retired LAPD, and he's also got the IA Guy podcast. And we're talking about the terror incident that happened in Colorado on Sunday. And it's an act of terror. And, you know, we're just trying to put people in the mindset. You know, we've got civilians, but we've got a lot of active and retired Leos that watch the show, too. I feel that's a responsibility. When I go out, when I'm with my wife and I'm in a controlled environment, a restaurant, whatever, I'm still watching where I sit, watching where I'm facing, and I scan the room immediately. I hope the guys that are watching the show, I hope that you're still doing this. I hope that you're still carrying. You know, I can't tell you the number of times I've taken bad guys to jail and they told me what kind of car I drove, what my wife looked like, told me how they followed me. They saw me in the mall and they followed me out to my car. They described this and described that to me, and I was able to verify the information. It is scary stuff. There's so much stuff that we just don't know. Operate off of what you do. But Marlon, I know that, that during the commercial break, you had some, you expressed some interest in adding on to this topic. You know, we'll try not to let Rich go first all the time, because, you know, he has a tendency to cover. He says that, you know, we've had guys like that on the show before. They talk and it's like, what is there left to say? You know, they just cover every angle, every possible, you know, point, you know. But one good thing about, you know, I can tell that we're already rubbing off on Rich, because he actually is dressed down the day. He does not have a tie on. And so there is hope. There is hope for that young man. But Marlon, go ahead.
Well, you got to remember also, you know, being a guy from Brooklyn, no one ever lets me speak and no one listens to me anyway. So I took the opportunity. Apologies, Marlon. Well, you know, it's all yours.
Yeah. Well, you know what? There's a lot of listening going on from this side of the aisle over here in California. What I would add is, number one, Rich knocked it out of the park as it relates to transparency. I don't think we in law enforcement do a good job, especially if you're up in the top as a sheriff, to come out and say, hey, you know what? This is a terrorist attack. This is what's going on. But more important than anything for me, what I get out of all this is behind the scenes. It's opening up the lines of communication, meaning that you should have debriefs in your local police department to let them know that, hey, look, this is what happened. This is what's going on. And more important than anything is, as a young rookie cop, you know what? Just be alert that this is a wake-up call. It's not just happening in Colorado. What I'm more interested in is, you know, who is this person affiliated with? Any associations, any type of groups where we can find that maybe perhaps it's here in Colorado. There might be something happening in Minnesota and all around the world, because to Rich's point, it's, and to your point, Chip, it's happening. It's going to continue to happen, whether or not it's a political stance or not. These terrorist attacks, if you will, are just, you know, they're on an uprise more than anything. This is just a reminder that someone is that bold that can walk in daylight on a Sunday and just throw flames and just injure people like that. That's just not tolerated. And we got to be able to anticipate to stop these criminal activities before that actually happens. So,
you know, I'm waiting to cover the story where we've got, you know, within 5 seconds, we have an active or off duty Leo, but off duty, putting a bullet in one of these suckers' heads and ending that threat. That's a story that I want to cover. And people have to realize, you know, we've invited this into our country. We've had open borders for 4 years, guys. What do you expect?
Yeah, no, 100%. I agree. It's definitely a phenomenon. It's on the uprise. And there's got to be a way that we can work behind the scenes and make sure we're not working in silos. I think that's one of the problems. We all have to kind of work together, local, state, federal, and ensure that these type of events don't happen in the future.
Yeah. Final words, Rich?
And putting a round into this guy is exactly what needed to be done to bring this to a quick conclusion, right? This isn't, there's no negotiation that's going to go on here. This isn't, you're not looking to make an arrest. This guy is going to continue to walk down that street and torch people and kill people, regardless of if they're Jewish or not, until somebody stops him. And that's going to end it. That's going to come at the end of the barrel of someone's gun. Unfortunately, yeah. That's not going to happen in New York, Colorado, Massachusetts, right? So what goes on there?
Yeah, there are certain.
Try that in Texas or Florida.
Yeah, civilians don't get it. There are certain situations where you don't give warnings. You know, there's no need to. It's not practical. People die if you take the time to give a warning. You got some guy that's an active threat. You need to take an active response and end that threat. You know, you've got a bad guy that's at a bar and he's holding a shotgun to someone's chest, and you're really going to take the time. You don't think the threat is sufficient enough to just go ahead and go lethal, straight to lethal, and take care of business. So, we got some people that are backing us up. We got Kyle Brandt on Facebook, Steve Bartlett on Facebook, and some other people. So thanks for the commentary, guys. We appreciate it. If you guys are ready to move on, we've got another story. It's an update story. It's Fox2Detroit.com. Judge drops a case against a Michigan detective who hit and killed Samuel Sterling. I remember when we covered the story on the show. So the backstory is that we have a Detective Sergeant Brian Keeley charged with second-degree murder and involuntary manslaughter for the April 17, 2024 death of Samuel Sterling in Kentwood. So it happened about a year ago. I remember when this went down, and we were pretty much saying, you know, you're definitely going to have to write a check on this one, and there may be more to it, because it just the optics, of course. Optics are never good with use of force, but the optics weren't great. But so Keeley, our Detective Sergeant, and other members of the MSP 6th District Fugitive Task Force, they're attempting to arrest this bad guy, Sterling, but he's fleeing on foot. So let me point out, this guy, had he been cooperative, this never would have happened, but he is a uncooperative, you know, bad guy fleeing on foot from cops. And we have we have guys in uniform and plain clothes. It's a federal task force. And so they're chasing this guy with their vehicles, and some of the people are on foot, but he's running. So Samuel Sterling ended up being killed when he's hit with an undercover MSP detective, a cool car, unmarked. And now the officer's been charged with the murder. And we have the Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel said that Keeley was in an unmarked car when he turned and hit Sterling in the parking lot of a Burger King restaurant. The video showed the vehicle actually pinning Sterling against the vehicle, or I guess the building, when it had stopped. And that's the way that it went down. So we're going to get more into that in just a second. I know we got our second commercial break coming up. So stick with us, guys. This is a wild story. And wait till you hear how the court came to their decision. But guys, stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, you know, in today's world, protection goes beyond physical safety, and it's about safeguarding those on the front lines from what we call hidden threats. Now, that's where MITEQ, which is the Division of Compliant Technologies, comes in. The MITEQ provides advanced protective solutions designed for law enforcement, corrections, and also first responders. Their Eagle Protect natural gloves, they offer four-hour fentanyl and xylene protection, giving you peace of mind in high-risk environments. Plus, their MyShield disinfectants and sanitizers, they actually eliminate 99.9% of germs, bacteria, and viruses on contact, and they continue the kill for up to 28 days, helping you stay protected both on and off duty. So when it comes to safety and it's non-negotiable, trust MITEQ to deliver the protection that you need. You can learn more about how to equip your team today by going to compliantechnologies.com/MITEQ. Again, that's compliantechnologies/MITEQ, because the best defense starts with the right protection. Now it's time to talk about Blue the Gold at bluethegold.com. If you're struggling with the ins and outs of warrantless searches and seizures, or if you're worried about the liability in case you get it wrong, say hello to bluethegold.com. They translate search and seizure doctrines into clear, straightforward concepts that any officer can relate to. Plus, they give the training for free thanks to bluethegold.com's free weekly webinars. Now, coming up, and this is on June the 11th, warrantless home entries. I'm sorry, June the 4th is coming up. Wow, that's coming up soon, tomorrow. So you can sign up at bluethegold.com today and join thousands of your peers in blue and step up your legal game, because frankly, you and your agency cannot afford not to. Bluetogold.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. Chip the Block here, and we're a law enforcement talk show talking about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. We've got retired Secret Service Rich Steropoli on the show, retired LAPD Sergeant Marlon Maracci on the show. Also, he's got the IA Guy podcast. We left off talking before commercial break about a judge dropping a case against Michigan detective who hit and killed a bad guy named Samuel Sterling. Now, look, I know how this one happened, how this thing happened, but this dude is a bona fide bad guy. All right. So they're chasing the bad guy. It's a federal task force. He's running on foot. We've got cops on foot. We got cops in cars chasing him down. So for whatever reason, our cop decides to take him out with a unmarked car and hit him with a car. The guy's not armed, and he pins him up against the when the car comes to rest. The bad guy's kind of stuck between the front of the car and the Burger King building. And the video showed the vehicle, you know, pinning him in. Now, after he was hit, Sterling, who was wanted on several warrants, he's handcuffed, told to breathe, relax while waiting for paramedics, taken to the hospital. He later dies, unfortunately. And it is unfortunate. Even though he's a bad guy, non-compliant, we don't want bad guys, you know, dying. Now, there's situations where maybe that should happen. It'll save lives. This is not one of those. So the case was moved to federal court. Get this, because Keeley, our cop, was working a part of a federal task force. So got that in the federal court. That was the nexus. And when he hit Sterling, the case was tossed in federal court after Keeley filed a motion to dismiss the charges. And here's what they're saying. So in the judge's decision, female judge, to toss the charges, Gerbeau wrote that's the judge, that the state did not present sufficient evidence to create a genuine dispute about whether Keeley acted pursuant to federal law and did no more than what was necessary and proper for him to what he needed to do in attempting to apprehend the bad guy. She also said that Keeley or cop was entitled to immunity. In this case, it would be qualified immunity. So it goes on to say that the other side, attorney Ben Johnson, who is representing the surviving family of the bad guy in a civil lawsuit. Remember, I said civil now against our cop and the county, Kent County. He said in a statement that the dismissal sends a troubling message that a police officer can run over an unarmed man and avoid facing a criminal jury. So, but that's in the civil case. Remember, these are two different cases, criminal and civil. So the criminal's, you know, been dropped. I'm curious about the commentary on this one, guys. Marlon, you want to start us off on this one? We've got a little over 8 minutes before we go to our next commercial break. But,
yeah,
Marlon Maracci.
One of the things that stands out the most for me is the fact that, you know, the little that I remember in law school about manslaughter and the analysis is that there's, you know, as we know, the standard of proof beyond a reasonable doubt, it's got to be pretty locked on. And under the circumstances, you're right. You're a police officer. You're working in an inherent dangerous job. And it turns out that what you really have is an in custody death. So what stands out to me just from an eye lens, so I understand he retired, but let's just say that he did not retire. Charges are dropped. Maybe the state's not going to go after. And next thing you know, you're looking at I can definitely tell you that one of the allegations from an administrative lens is going to be unauthorized or unlawful use of a firearm, something along those lines where, you know,
a vehicle.
Yeah, of a vehicle. Exactly. And the tactics that come along, whether you substantially deviated from all the department policy, tactics and procedures as it relates to the time that you actually, you know, pinned the guy. So all that's going to be analyzed, all that's going to be examined. And that's one of the reasons probably why you would retire is because you got the civil procedure and the civil suit where you do know that if you do the admin portion, anything that you say in a compelled interview can be used in a civil trial. So it's very, very unfortunate. I don't know the complete examination of circumstances, but again, the standard proof is so high beyond a reasonable doubt that the state just probably felt that under the circumstances, you know what, we just didn't have it. You know, we didn't meet that standard.
Excellent commentary. Thank you, Marlon. And Marlon, I forgot Marlon went to law school as well. So, Rich?
Well, you know, I got to tell you, I'm looking at this, and then what do I see here? So you've got a bad guy. He runs from the cops. Cops are pursuing him. He runs through this parking lot in front of this Burger King, and the cop runs him over. The only thing I'm feeling bad about is, you know, now you've got to do some body work on this perfectly good police car, right? This guy wasn't looking, he wasn't going to go out and cure cancer. This is a bad guy. As far as I'm concerned, the cop did a solid job here. Yeah, there's going to be some civil procedural issues here. There's some administrative issues here. This is one of the reasons why whenever I would go out with the local cops, I'd usually try to bring a deputy U.S. Marshal with me. And we would deputize the local cops, whether they were NYPD, New Jersey, wherever they may be, so that we can remove cases from the local courts and go right to federal court where this kind of thing would have just got tossed. Right. I think the cop did a good job here. Hopefully he didn't damage his car too badly.
Nothing that
our watch can't clean up.
Yeah.
I would also like to Chip, if I may add also into this, is that one of the things that we talk about also as law enforcement is creating the exigency. And to Rich's point, look, if this guy is a bad guy, I mean, he's got a criminal record that's a rap sheet like forever. We've been looking for this guy and he starts taking off. Yeah, you know, you can do an analysis of Tennessee v. Garner, whatever the case may be. But you created that exigency. And when you're driving at a certain speed, the last thing a cop's thinking is, you know, I want to get this guy. That, you know, you want to be able to capture and effect the arrest. So all those circumstances is where that analysis comes. And I think, again, with manslaughter, I don't know anything about the state of Michigan because each statute is a little different from state to state. So just want to make sure that your crowd understands that the exigency, whoever creates that, and in this case, according to the facts, it's the bad guy running. Not a lot of good is going to happen when you run away from the cops.
So on the other angle,
plus
guys,
sorry, Chip, go ahead.
No, it's good. Well, I'm just going to throw in a devil's advocate here. Let's just say that you're an agency head, you're a sheriff or police chief, and let's just say this guy works for you, and this happened under your watch. And then just say you're thinking about liability, you're thinking about this guy. Look, there's obviously probably a training component here. I think that, you know, if I was the agency head, we'd definitely be hitting the skid pad, the car, I'd be showing guys, you know, we'd be talking about using, you know, cool cars in situations like this. But are you going to let this guy work on the street for you without letting them go? Let him go through the process of getting his job back, arbitration, civil service, whatever it is. Because if you let him stay on the job and something even remotely similar happens, you know, you might as well, you know, turn your keys in and your key card and you're going to be gone.
Well, you're right. But you know what? As a manager, supervisor, patrol supervisor, chief or whatever, that's incumbent upon me. When one of my guys, whether he puts hands on someone, he runs somebody over with a car or he shoots someone, whether I agree with it or not, I'll back the guy. But yeah, there may be some administrative things I have to do because down the line, I've got to make sure I protect not only him, myself, and the 500 guys in my department I'll deal with that. But that's totally separate. Then I'm not firing the guy for running someone over. As a matter of fact, in the bigger picture, which is what I started to say, listen, we need some of this old school stuff where word goes back out. You run from the cops, you're going to pay the price. You're a bad guy. You pull a gun on a cop, you're going to pay the price. And if word goes out amongst some gang members that, hey, if you run from the cops, they're going to climb up on the sidewalk and run you over and then go have lunch in Burger King and finish my onion rings. Hey, too bad, right? I didn't pick the circumstances. You did.
You were doing good with the word pitchers today, Rich. I'll tell you, because I was right there, you know, at the Burger King, you know, with the onion rings and stuff when you said that. So
it's radio, sir. I got to paint the picture.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Anything else, guys? Are you ready to move on to the first story with a video component?
Yeah, just one more thing, Chip. Just to your point, you bring up a very solid point to say that a lot of cops that get criminally charged, for whatever reason, they end up resigning or they end up leaving the department. So that's a hard decision to make if you decide to stay and go through the admin process. There isn't many, you know, and again, those are tough decisions. Do you develop them? Do you discharge them? And, you know, that analysis is super important to make those decisions. So I just wanted to, you know, kind of chime in on that too.
My last 6 years, I worked with a police union. So on the other side of IA. And I worked out a lot of exit strategies for cops. Some of them, they needed to be done so that they would stop looking at them. You know what I'm saying? You know, if I resign, will everything else just go away? And some of those were just the cops who just couldn't handle the fight. They weren't going to be in the fight, you know, and they didn't want it bad enough. They just wanted to check out. And I respect that. Everybody's built differently. And having had my own battle, you know, and the stress associated with that, I get it, you know, so not everybody's out for that. So guys, let's go in and jump. We've got less than a minute. So I'm just going to go in with the appetite on this next one. And this next story, it's at our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. And it's at rumble.com. A body cam video released in a police shooting that leaves two Mifflin Township police officers wounded.
I'm hit.
Now, one of them is more serious than the other one. This is a hellacious story, let me tell you. And we're going to get into it in just 1 second. But let me just say that if you're listening to the show and you're listening audibly, your favorite podcast or radio station, please stay loyal to the outlets that are bringing you this good quality content. In return for that, we'll describe in great detail what's going on so you don't feel like you're missing out on anything. But if you want to see a video that we talk about, go to our Rumble channel the very next day, 9 o'clock in the morning. We'll put up a special version of the live show that has everything embedded into it. Commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And, you know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and even disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at gunlearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Apianko. Now, the courses actually had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn's been a trusted source since 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, if you have your own agency, you're a chief or sheriff, and you're listening to this program, they've got a deal for you. The founder, Dan O'Kelly, has arranged it where you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. Go to gunlearn.com to get more information. Again, that is gunlearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. We've got retired Secret Service Rich Steropoli on the show, and also retired Sergeant LAPD Marlon Marachi, who also has the IA Guy podcast as well. We left off talking about body cam video released in a police shooting that left two Mifflin Township police officers wounded. We're going to cover this real quick. It's in the Columbus, Ohio area. So this newly released camera footage, it captures the moments when a suspect, he opened fires on these two Mifflin Township police officers. It starts off at the traffic stop. It's on Wednesday evening. According to the Franklin County Sheriff Dallas Baldwin, he's got a cool name. Two officers, they're doing a traffic stop at 6:45 in the evening. And so they stop this car. But about 4 minutes into the stop, they're talking with the driver, but the passenger, he's a 21-year-old. So, you know, this guy should be able to move pretty quick, right? You know, the bad guys are always 18 to 21 years old anyhow, right? So Devontae Dixon, he's the first bad guy we've covered in a while that only has two names. They usually have three, but he bails out of the car on the passenger side and he starts running. So we got cops are pretty well split up. Driver side, passenger side. So the cop on the passenger side, the guy opens up the door, gets out, bolts, cop follows suit. Now our cop that's on the driver's side, he goes out on dispatch, tells them they got one running, and then he starts to give chase as well. But he's fairly well behind the first cop. So as the officers are pursuing our bad guy, Dixon, it says that he allegedly turns and opens fire to the officers. Well, there's little doubt that what happened. There's a video on this. So he turns around and he produces a gun and fires. Now, the scary thing was is that in the third video, it's a surveillance video, not a body cam. You get to see it's just on the bad guy. Man, this guy takes a heck of a freaking stance when he's aiming. And he is like, he's got purpose and intent. He's taking out both these cops. So both officers sustained gunshot wounds. They're transported to the Grant Medical Center. One's listed in critical, and the other one reported as stable. One of the officers was discharged on Thursday. Now, President Brian Steele, he's from the FOP, gave commentary on this, but the other officer went to the emergency surgery, and that happened on Thursday morning, and then he's been in intensive care after that, and he had to have a follow-up surgery. Video from the officer who's standing near the passenger door, this is his body cam, this is the first one you're going to look at. The suspect gets out of the car, officer gives chase, suspect is seen running through a grassy area, he falls, and the officer gets his gun out. But then seconds later, the officer can be heard yelling out. There's multiple gunshots being heard. And then the video from the other officer that was on the driver's side of the car, that shows him, you know, he goes on a radio. He follows the suspect, but he's behind the first officer. And you hear the gunshots ring out. And the officer, the second officer, he's running with a taser in his hand. And you know, it's just one of those things to where, you know, unless you do a lot of high-stress training, he just won't let go of the freaking taser, right? So finally, you know, he's running away from the gunfire. He doesn't have, and I don't know how close cover was for him. So, I mean, other than maybe getting in a prone position on the ground or something, you know, I'm assuming he's running for cover, but he's got that stupid taser in his right hand. He finally throws it down and he gets on radio, says, "Shots fired, I'm hit." And he has the gun in his left hand. So I don't know if he's left-handed, how that worked, but he ended up having the firearm in his left hand. And so then our last camera angle shows our bad guy for several seconds in that stance, taking the shots and like he's picking off these cops. Wow. Chief Deputy Rick Menard urged the public to remain vigilant, noting that Dixon, our bad guy, is still freaking at large, considered armed and dangerous. He was last seen wearing a gray shirt and camouflage pants. Wow. And court records give a little bit of history on the bad guy. And he's had weapons possession stuff before. And you know, they, with all the charges, aggravated battery, unlawful possession of a danger, you know, dangerous ordnance and weapons possession, he got community control for 6 months. You know, that's just kind of crazy because he's out there on the street. But we have about 5.5 minutes, gentlemen, commentary on this one, whoever wants to go first. But you don't get a lot of videos that show this up close and personal like this. We got three different videos to look at. Rich?
Well, I'll tell you, just from watching this video, that's as real a gunfight at the OK Corral video as you can see. This was a real deal cop, bad guy, standing there exchanging rounds. What amazes me is how well composed these cops were with the radio traffic. I mean, I've been in two shootings, and you listen to those radio conversations. I certainly wasn't anywhere near as composed as those guys were. They did an outstanding job. It was a bad situation that they rolled into, you know, from the get-go. You've got one cop dealing with the driver, get another cop on the passenger side. That guy takes off running. Now you've got all sorts of things going on, and ultimately it ends up in this gun battle that was well caught on video.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much. Marlon, what's your take on this?
Man, you know what? Any gun battle, as far as I'm concerned, all bets are off, man. You know, this is look, every rookie cop, everybody who's trying to get on the job, and including those TikTok cops as well that you see out there, you know what? You need to watch this, because this is what happens, especially in traffic stops. You know, we always say that, you know, risk versus reward. In other words, is the juice worth the squeeze when you make a traffic? In other words, you get a radio call and you think it's just like a trespassing or something very minor. And next thing you know, it becomes a critical incident. And so this is just a reminder that, look, someone's going to open fire, all bets are off completely. That whole department and neighboring agencies, your sole job every day is to find this guy and get him in cuffs, arrest this guy. And if whatever it takes, you know, chances are it might be a critical incident. You might get into an OIS. Just know that when you're chasing this guy and trying to find him, it's game on, man. You better have your game face. You better be ready, prepared 100% to get this guy. And it just reminds me about how just it sucks, man. Traffic stops are super, super dangerous. And let's not forget that, you know, anything can happen. Just be ready. Now, in terms of the taser, look, we can sit here and critique, you know, every single moving taxes the let up to the point where, you know, the officer's engaged, et cetera, et cetera. But man, hey, the fact that he had non-lethal one hand of the taser and he says, you know what, fuck, you know what, whatever, I'm just going to get rid of it and, you know, switch to lethal. That's what you got to do. And under the circumstances, you know, you're fighting for your life, man, especially if someone's, you know, shooting at you. So, yeah, this gets under my skin a lot because all bets are off to try to go find this guy.
So I don't know what the level of training is at the agency. And look, it's easy. Yeah. Look, it's easy in Monday morning quarterback. We don't have all the information. Yeah. The second cop is at a little bit more of a disadvantage because he's got a driver there. He doesn't know the driver's armed or not. He takes his attention off the driver and moves it on the guy, on the bad guy that ran out of the passenger seat. It's like chasing a guy that bails out of a car. You don't run by that car until you make sure that car is clear, right? You know, you got a bad guy waiting in there for you. So, I suspect that they don't do a lot of high stress, you know, shooting. And you know, we still have guys doing static shooting. They're standing still. They're not moving, and all these things too. So, there is a lot to be said for doing high stress training in a high stress environment, and little things like, you know, if he's right hand dominant and you got a taser, you know, in that hand, you need to put the fire, you know, just little things that when you're used to high stress environments, you know, you'll think more clearly and be able to make those transitions. And when you're running and you got a bad guy stationary trying to pick you off while you're running, you know, away, but you know, he was up and running for a while. I'm curious to see what the, you know, if their tactics, you know, they train about, you know, like dropping to the ground, or maybe you've got the patrol car right there that you can use as cover, not concealment, but cover, little things like that. I wish training, we're always inadequate on training everywhere. So, and training's never equal. You're involved with the training group as well, Marlon. So that's where I'm just trying to, I always encourage these guys training. We can never have enough training.
I was going to also say is that, to your point, we don't want to be, you know, so critical about every single movement of these officers and pass judgment. With that being said, it's one of those situations where, yeah, you're going to deviate from whatever you were taught. And you're right. We don't know. We don't know the type of training these officers have received. But chances are you're always going to deviate from some of your tactics. The question is, when you substantially deviate, can you justify those actions? This kind of reminds me, and again, you have a passenger and a driver, right? Back in LEPD, I worked on a case in OIS, an officer involved shooting. Same thing. They did a traffic stop. And what ends up happening is as soon as they do the traffic stop, they approach. And next thing you know, the car takes off, chases on. And now both the driver and the suspect, the driver takes off, suspect stays. And the partner officer, because we're a two-man car, has to stay with the passenger while the driving officer starts chasing the suspect. And you're like, you know, what decisions do you make? So my point is that they didn't separate, and separation is huge. And, you know, the good thing is that they were together, and you could imagine all the things that could have happened if they would have separated or one would have stayed with the passenger, et cetera, et cetera.
Excellent. Thank you, guys. Hey, great show, and appreciate you guys both being here. Rich Steropoli, thank you so much for being on the show, retired Secret Service. Marlon Maracci, retired LAPD as well. I usually take this opportunity to talk about the Wounded Blue, thewoundedblue.org. Please check out that source, guys. A great charity to support. Well, that's not going to embarrass you. Galls.com, ComplianTechnologies.com, GunLearner.com, BlueTheGold.com, AmediCare.life, Safeguard Recruiting, and Two Bells. Thank you guys so much. And hey, another fantastic show. Stick with us. Don't go anywhere, but thanks for the support.